here with her Massachusetts state driver's license, in which she was allowed to wear this spaghetti colander on her head for religious reasons. She is a Pastafarian. And this is a thing. She's a Pastafarian, otherwise known as a member of the Church of the Great Spaghetti Monster. She argued, ordinarily you're not allowed to wear a hat or anything in your driver's license photo, but she argued that because she was a Pastafarian and believed in the Great Spaghetti Monster, that she ought to be allowed to wear this, and she was granted that privilege. Now, ordinarily, I don't make fun of other people's religious convictions. This might be a little extreme, but in fact, she invites us to make fun of her religious conviction, because the Church of the Great Spaghetti Monster is actually a secular humanist atheist organization, which is designed to show us how silly we look to the rest of the world. It's designed to kind of lampoon people who are part of more conventional religious organizations. How silly does it look for us to insist upon some of the things we insist upon? And if you stop and think about it for a moment, from the outside, you know, some of the things that we claim boldly on a weekly basis are pretty strange. That a Jewish carpenter in first century Palestine was actually the Son of God, more so God himself. That this God-man was crucified and died would be strange enough, but then to proclaim that he was raised from the dead, certainly as an atheist, as someone from outside the faith looking at this, you've got to wonder, you know, what's the difference between those kinds of statements and the statements about the great spaghetti monster from outer space? What's true? What is truth? So Jesus is having this conversation with Pilate. It's an odd sort of time to drop this text into the lectionary, but here it is. It's Christ the King Sunday, which means it's the last Sunday before we begin to celebrate Advent and Christmas. And here is a text that comes right out of Passion Week, would be right at home the day before Easter. As Jesus is on trial before the Roman authorities, on trial for his life. Eventually, he's going to be crucified at the say-so of Pilate himself. And this text is about the conversation between Pilate and Jesus in that trial. And as such, it must have been an extremely frustrating conversation for Pilate. Because every time he asks a question as an adjudicator, he gets the most bizarre kind of sideways, offhand answers that go just all over the place, at least on the surface of things. But I want to suggest to you that what's really happening in this text is Jesus is not answering Pilate's legal questions. He's answering his real questions. I want you to listen for a moment to the questions that Pilate is asking, and I want you to think with me for a moment, are these not the most important questions in our life? Are you the Christ? What does that make me? What have you done? Are you a king then? What is the truth? I mean, those questions out there on a billboard, those questions are the sort that wake people up at night. Those are key, crucial questions, and the answer that Jesus gives, while legally unsatisfying, cut right to the very heart of truth. What is truth? Well, on the one hand, you know, the Pastafarians would say, you guys have lost it. Truth is what you can measure and prove. They think of, much of the world thinks of truth in terms of the objective, the things that we can show, that we can prove, that we can add two and two to make four, we can logically come to this conclusion. That's what truth is. And maybe you have a subjective idea of truth, the things that you think are true, the things that you believe, the things that you believe on the inside, but objectively, truth is truth. The things that I can prove, the things that I can say beyond any shadow of doubt are so. And so for them and for much of the rest of the world, the church often looks closed-minded. That's one of the complaints that comes from the world. And it kind of encompasses a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks. We are closed-minded. We're closed-minded perhaps to the point of bigotry and being judgmental. We're closed-minded perhaps to the point of believing that we have some kind of a monopoly on the truth and that nobody that doesn't believe exactly as we believe can possibly walk in right relationship with God. We're closed-minded. Maybe we're closed-minded even in terms of not embracing or accepting what science and math seems to show is so. I remember during my first week on the university campus as a freshman, I was in a freshman honors class at UK, and the professor stopped me after class. We've been having a discussion. I don't remember exactly what was said during the discussion, but here's what he had to say to me afterwards. He said, you know, you seem to be a pretty bright young man. He says, I wish you luck in your academic endeavors, but if you're going to succeed as an academic, you're going to have to leave behind your medieval superstitions about Jesus. Those were his words. There may be things that we can show are true. There may be things that we can feel are true. But as Jesus talks with Pilate about the questions that he's really answering, he identifies a third form of truth. It's not objective. It's not subjective. It's something altogether different. An altogether different way of answering questions. An altogether different way of seeing the world. Are you the Christ then? Pilate asks. Jesus says, do you say so, or did someone else tell you that? Friends, that is a fundamental question for every person in this room. Every now and then I'll get a call from a parent, and I've talked with Jamie. He gets these calls too. Parents of teenagers call, and they are all tore up. My child is having a crisis of faith. They're starting to ask questions. I've raised them in the church. I've taught them my faith. They've gone to Sunday school. They know all of the stories. I've told them and over again the truth about Jesus, and now they're starting to ask questions. I believe they're having a crisis of faith. I know that there's a pastoral thing to say here, but what I usually wind up saying before the conversation is over is, good. They need to do that. Junior high, high school, college, maybe even into young adulthood. At some point, each and every one of us needs to answer the question, you say Jesus is Messiah. Is that your voice or is that someone else's voice in your head? Are you saying that because you believe it or because your parents told you to say that? Are you saying that because you believe it or because that's what the preacher says on Sunday? Are you saying that because you... Is that your answer or somebody else's? That's a key question that every one of us needs to find for ourselves. And when Jesus gives that question as his answer, Pilate returns, well, what am I, a Jew then? And on the face of it, you know, it's an offhand kind of smart aleck remark, but the next question that's key for each of us here is, who does that make me? If Jesus is Messiah, who does that make me? I grew up in the Methodist Church. And when I found my own relationship with God, I discovered that I was comfortable remaining in the Methodist Church. And as I studied and moved on into ministry, I discovered that this is the best fit for me. But sometimes it's not. I mean, sometimes we have to question our upbringing a little bit and say, now that I've discovered that Jesus is the Christ, who does that make me? Where do I belong? Because hear me say this. When we get to heaven, I don't think there's going to be a denominational label over any of the doors there. It's not a matter of what I was brought up believing or what tradition I was brought up in. It's a question of what do I believe about Jesus now and who does that make me? There's a couple in one of my other churches. They had two sons, both of them grown. One of them had moved away, was living in the Pacific Northwest, and the other was still hanging about town. And was in and out of trouble. Frankly, everyone in town knew he was had drug addiction problems. I knew he had drug addiction problems, but the parents had never said so. They'd never had conversation with me or anyone at church about that. And one evening after Sunday services, the lady stops me, "Pastor, can I give you a ride home?" And I knew something's up because the parsonage is just, you know, like a block and a half behind the church. And it is on her way, but she's never offered me a ride home before. So I said, "Sure." And I got in the car with her, and we drove up, and she stops, and she's drumming her fingers on the steering wheel. Obviously, you know, I know there's a conversation that needs to be had. And so I'm just kind of finally say, "Okay, well, thanks for the ride." And she says, "No, preacher, no, I have to talk to someone about my son." I said, "Oh, really, what's the issue with your son?" Thinking, you know, finally it's going to come out, all the pain, all the betrayal, all the... And she clears her throat and she begins to cry. And she says, "I never thought this would happen to me." She said, "He's a Catholic." She was talking about her older son who was living in the Pacific Northwest, and he'd found his faith, but he found it in a place other than where she found it, and he wound up pursuing a degree in philosophy, and he became a Catholic, and you know, listen, it's not that I don't believe there aren't differences. There are, and they're profound, and they're meaningful, and they're important, and yet... One of the key questions that everyone has to answer as they move through their faith in Jesus is, you know, who do I think he is and who does that make me? And Jesus says, "You know why you struggle with some of the answers to this is because you don't understand my kingdom is not of this world." And the labels that we put on things here are our labels and not his labels. And so when we don't know what words to attach to things, we have to use words, but they're our words. And Jesus said, "No, the kingdom is bigger than your words. The kingdom is bigger than your ideas. The kingdom is bigger than your doctrines. The kingdom is bigger than all of those things. Just tell me, Jesus, are you a king?" Pilate says, and Jesus says, "If you say so, I can be your king, if you say so." But that's a human word. What I've really come to do is to lead people into truth. What is truth? Pilate says. Now, Jesus doesn't answer that question in the moment, or at least not in words. But he's spoken the answer earlier. Earlier in the evening or the day before, depending on just exactly how you put it all together, he had his disciples gathered. He tells them that he's getting ready to go away, and some of his disciples says, "We want to follow you." And Jesus says, well, you can't, but you will later. And Thomas says, how can we go where you're going if we don't know the way? And do you remember Jesus' answer? He said, I am the way and the truth and the life. See, for some people, truth is a list of the things that we can prove mathematically or observe with our senses or show through experimentation. For some people, truth is the thing that I feel on the inside, and you can't take that away from me because it's mine and I feel it, and that makes it true for me. But Jesus adds an entirely different category. He says, I am the truth. The truth is not a feeling. The truth is not a list of factual statements. The truth is a person. And if you look back at the answers he gave Pilate throughout this conversation, we realize it's not objective, it's not subjective, it's relational. Truth is relational for Jesus. Are you the Christ? Are you a king? What's the truth? What does that make me? Those are all questions with relational answers in Jesus' teaching. Who are we to each other? I don't know if there are any other Trekkies in the bunch. Anybody live long and prosper? No? Okay, a few. The character I loved in the original Star Trek series, because I could understand Mr. Spock. I was good with math and science, and if a problem could be reasoned out, I could solve it. If you could add it up and come up with a total, if you could prove it, if you could experiment. You know, Mr. Spock was all logic. If you don't know the Star Trek universe, he was from a planet called Vulcan, in which logic reigned and emotions had been pushed all the way down to be all but non-existent. And so him, I could deal with. And one of his great sayings, just a little piece of math magical, that was what I was going to say. I guess, well, let's stick with that one. Math magical truth. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the needs of the one. Simple, right? If it's good for me, but it's bad for everyone else, then it's bad. If it's bad for me and good for everyone else, then it's good. That's math. I can add that up. You can do the equation. Okay, we've got 5 people it's good for over here. We've got 8 people it's bad for. It must be bad. But if you know the Star Trek universe and you followed it through, you know there comes a time when Mr. Spock has to abandon his own logic because Kirk is in trouble, and he has to put the crew of the entire starship at risk to go rescue Kirk. And you probably remember that moment in which Spock steps into the reaction chamber and surrenders his own life. And Captain Kirk comes to talk to him. Why, this doesn't make sense, Spock. This is not logical. And Spock's only reply is, you always have been, and you always will be, my friend. And that changes everything, see? That kind of drains away the math and kind of drains away the subjectiveness and just leaves really the core, real, true thing. We're friends. That's who we are to each other. What's truth? Jesus says, I'm truth. What we are to each other is truth. And the risk of blasphemy. I think Jesus would echo Spock and say, I always have been, always will be your friend. Always have, always will love you. Always have, always will want what's best for you. Always have. That's truth. That's what's true. So I try to get it right. I do. I try and reason it out. I try to do my theology. I read my scriptures carefully. Because if it turns out there is a multiple choice portion to the entrance exam when I get to heaven, I do want to be able to score well on it. I do. But my expectation is there's only really going to be one question. Who are we to each other? That's truth. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let God's people say, Amen.